Hello, everyone. Welcome to One More Prime, the Transformers Watch Along. I am Mike Schwartz, who is about to travel the globe.
Yay!
I'm joined by my kids, Emmett and Elsa.
Hello.
Hi.
Who can't come with me. You still have one more week of school.
I'm sorry, what?
Mean.
We are watching City of Steel, episode 18 of season 2. As mentioned within this episode, we remark that writer Douglas Booth always seems to write the Autobots and Decepticons traveling to different locations. You know, something different than the arid surroundings of the Ark or the random power plant. So I took a look, and sure enough, Booth writes quite the travelogue. Fire on the Mountain, they went to Peru. The Ultimate Doom, Cybertron. Please excuse our dog squeaks. We'll keep this in. A Plague of Insecticons, they went to Bali, City of Steel, New York City, of course, Atlantis Arise, oh boy, Washington, D.C., the Insecticon Syndrome, a national park of some sort, that counts, a Decepticon Raider in King Arthur's Court, that's 6th century Britain, so that's travel and time travel, Sea Change, the planet of Talak, and Aerial Assault, an unnamed country in the Middle East. So, our theory holds up, kids. Well done.
Woohoo! Yeah.
This week's guest is Mario Muscar. Mario is a writer, a performer, an 8-bit gamer, another friend through comics. Written by Douglas Booth and airing on October 17th, 1985, this is City of Steel. Okay, everybody, joining us today is our good buddy Mario Muscar. Mario, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Are you familiar with this cartoon named The Transformers?
The Transformers. Yes, I'm somewhat familiar with The Transformers. I'm a pretty big Transformers fan. Grew up on these cartoons. They came out, what, in 84, probably, about then.
Yep, 84. These episodes are October 85 now.
Yes, okay. So in 84, I was a 7-year-old child.
And it perfect was, age.
It was the prime age for Transformers. And I remember coming home. I'm sure a lot of people had the same experience. Coming home after school, and they would be on at like, it was like 3 o'clock and 3:30 or 3:30 and 4 o'clock was Transformers and G.I. Joe.
Yep.
Back to back. So I would go to my grandma's after school because my parents both work. So I would go to my grandma's after school and I would plop down, get a snack and you know, sit down for an hour and watch these Hasbro cartoons. And, you know, liked them a fair amount. But I would say it was probably, you know, I was getting the toys and such. But I would say it was probably the movie, which was, what, 86, that really cemented my love of it. I mean, that was transformative for a lot of people of my generation. You know, spoilers, Prime dies. But oh, yeah.
Braun is the first one to go.
Yes.
I don't think he's actually dead. He's too tough.
Braun probably is too tough. Yes. So always was a fan. Loved the comics when I was a kid. Still read the comics to this day. Still buy toys to this day.
What is your latest purchase?
I have some pre-orders out, but I'm trying to think what was the most recent one I got. I honestly can't remember what the most recent one I got. It was one of the Dinobots. It was not Grimlock. It was from the 86.
Studio series stuff.
Yes,
Slag from the 86. Slash Slug.
It's Slag. It was Slag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Careful, that's offensive.
Yeah, now renamed Slug. I think. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, Slug. Emmett, you have a Perceptor on pre-order.
Yes, I have
it was supposed to arrive in April, and then they're like, "How about December?"
Yes. That's how these Hasbro toys go. Yeah. I also get a lot of the G.I. Joe classifieds. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's always like pre-order is for May of 2023. And I'm like, really? That's a long way out.
What was your favorite toy growing up?
I would say I really love the big ones. I love my Metroplex. I loved Metroplex. It's still one of my favorite Transformers to this day. Trypticon. And Trypticon was really easy to transform, but like any of those bigger citywide Transformers I always thought were really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Is Metroplex yellow now?
Oh no, Metroplex does. I don't even know where Metroplex is in a landfill somewhere, I'm sure.
Oh no.
Yes, I do not have any of my original Transformers except for a Soundwave and a couple of the little guys. Like, I have a
cassettes.
Bumblebee sitting around.
Oh.
No cassettes. No, I mean, I have them now, but not the of my original ones.
I still have mine. Looking back, I guess I didn't have a huge collection compared to other kids, but I cherished what I had. But
many boxes downstairs.
Yeah, they're all downstairs. I can get them right now. But my He-Man collection, like I had a lot, and I was looking around my parents' basement and I couldn't find anything. And I think we all have like a repressed memory. Like we have missing time where we have no idea what happened to them. It's like, I don't think we would have sold them at a garage sale or given them away. We're like, we have no idea where all my He-Man toys are. I mean, they're long gone, but it's just like, yeah, they might be at a landfill too. So whenever we go to like a comic show, we see, you know, a Buzz Off in a Ziploc bags, like could that have been mine?
your parents would have definitely tried to keep them.
But, like, I know, and toys. I had Castle Grayskull and the Battle Cat and a lot of guys.
Snout Spout.
God, I love He-Man as well. I loved He-Man too.
And they're all gone.
All Even gone. Fisco. My mom gave most of my toys like that. Most of my Hasbro Mattel toys that were like figures and action figures, she gave those to my godparents' son, who was probably 4 or 5 years younger than me. Mm-hmm. And I remember like when she said, I'm just going to give these to them. And at the time, you know, I was a kid who was trying to be an older kid. So I was like, yeah, that's fine. You know,
mm-hmm.
But I really wish inside. She wouldn't have. On the inside, yeah, no. I'm crying.
On second thought. Yeah. Yeah.
Reason I asked if the Metroplex was yellow, some of the figures that I have up on my shelf, they're right near the window, so they've gotten a bit yellow, but
some damage.
The one that I hope to fix, Skylynx, I want to fix it so bad, because that can be done with bleach, but
yeah.
It peels off the stickers, but I'll hopefully avoid those.
Right, yes.
Wait, he yellow?
Yeah.
Sort of. Skylynx is hopefully...
Just pretend that he is aged through battle.
Oh, to the bleach we go.
Yeah, I've been seeing that a lot. Like, a lot of the newer toys are yellowing faster.
Oh, I think it was Shattered Glass Starscream that had that problem.
Yeah, or even, like, people that get the new Bumblebee Ratchet. Like, out of the package, like, the joints on the legs are different colors already because they're already yellowing.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah,
I've experienced that, but that's crazy.
Yeah.
I've been trying my best to keep my Alita one out of the sight of the sun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because that's a lighter one, too, right? Yeah, you have Alita one and RC. Yeah, ooh, yeah, those are a lot of lighter colored toys. Watch out.
I'm protected over those two.
Yeah. But you know what else is changing? New York City because of the Decepticons.
Oh, awesome transition. Thank you.
New York City.
Yes, we are watching City of Steel. Written by Douglas Booth, who, let's see, he wrote Fire on the Mountain.
He wrote some of the wacky ones. He wrote some of the wacky ones.
The higher quality, I think, in what we've watched so far. The Ultimate Doom Trilogy.
Roll for it.
Which is great. Roll for it. Atlantis Arise.
Yes.
I think is our favorite one. Like that, and that's another kind of travelogue episode because they're in the middle of Washington, D.C., so maybe he's an East Coast guy and he keeps bringing him from Oregon to the coast.
I can't remember where it falls in the order, but did you guys watch that Sea Spray one where he becomes a merman?
Yes.
Well, we watched it on our own.
Okay.
Yet. Yeah.
Douglas Booth wrote that one as well.
Yes. Yep, that one's coming up as far as recording for the show.
And a Decepticon Raider in King Arthur's Court.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. All these weird, like, almost, like, fantasy, like, kind of, you know.
Right.
Fantasy-based stories.
Well,
except for this New York one.
Yeah. Well, as we watch the show, we always appreciate when a writer breaks the mold.
Megatron's master plan was so good.
Oh, that was so good. And yeah, also, right, Emmett, in that one, in Megatron's master plan, he was trying to take over kind of a Las Vegas-y looking city. It's kind of one of those cities built in the desert.
Central City.
It was called Central City. That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's now set his ambitions from a lowly desert town to the biggest one of all, New York City. And we open up with a really nicely painted skyline. Pre-9/11, we must mention.
Yes.
And I just noticed.
Very obvious at the end. Very obvious at the end that it's pre-9/11.
Yeah, I know. It just sticks out. So we have Laserbeak using every Star Wars sound effect imaginable within about 20 seconds.
I was just going to say that. They love to use the Star Wars effects.
I've never found an answer why they have access to that or how they got away with it. But if you listen for it, you will hear them all the time.
Yep, all the time. TIE fighters, lightsabers, the Millennium Falcon.
Vader for like 5 seconds.
Except in the episode later on when they use an actual lightsaber, they don't use the sound effect.
No, that's right.
No, that's a Gundam beam saber.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm looking at this water pouring into the sewer system as Laserbeak flies to the Decepticons' new headquarters. And this is where I want to mention, this is the first episode produced by Acom, which is the Animation Korea Movie Productions. It was a South Korean animation studio, still in effect, founded by Nelson Shin, who is kind of the first name we see at the end of the credits with every episode. A lot of the episodes we watched before in season one and the front half of season two were produced by Toei, which is a Japanese company. And I guess at the time, production costs were going up and Marvel started working with this production company because they were also doing Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends and some of the other Marvel comic adaptation shows. And so eventually Transformers moved over to Acom Studios. More in season three, like they do a lot of them. And it's kind of interesting to see the very noticeable change in art style. I guess Acom is kind of known for being very error prone. They were a more cost efficient studio. I think companies got a lot of work out of them, but it maybe wasn't the most consistent looking stuff. But the one thing,
at least in this episode, they have the good backgrounds.
Well, yeah, that's what I wanted to point out. Like the background paintings are actually really nice, and some of the effects like this water and explosions later on, and even I did read that some of their frame rates were actually more, and you can kind of see when we get to the Constructicons later that, you know, the movement is pretty smooth, but like the characters are a little more like you ran in after you watch this episode, Emmett, you're like, they look like GoBots
during, even like, hey, they're GoBots.
Yeah, it just has a little more, I don't know, like 80s cartoon style, you know what I mean?
Scooter.
Like a little more kind of Hanna-Barbera. I think it's just the way the figures move. And
their Megatron's face, though.
Right.
Yes, I agree. It's I don't know if the correct thing would say less polished. It's not necessarily less polished, but it's just the style of the animation is slightly different enough, or the way that that they're animating it, right? From cell to cell or something. It's just different.
So it will be interesting going forward to see this studio take over and see how the look changes, especially when we get into season three, which I honestly have not watched season three stuff in a very long time. I'm curious to see how that's all going to look.
The season three stuff is the stuff that comes after the movie. And it's the animation is hard to take a little bit because they're really, I think they really did cut costs, but you'll see eventually.
That. I'm more interested in the season three stories because, like, I've heard they get crazy, and
they do.
It's been a long time since I watched.
I love the season three stories. If I wanted to watch Transformers, those are the episodes I'd want to watch. But as far as animation goes, they're not great.
Yeah.
But this one, however, Megatron's grand plan of let's turn New York City into new Cybertron.
So Laserbeak is flying into their new headquarters, which is built underneath Manhattan.
That doesn't sound right.
Right. And as we'll see, it's their whole base has to stretch at least 25 blocks. Because I kind of mapped it out, like where
Yikes.
The Empire State Building is in regards to Central Park. And they're in that base where they kind of come up to the surface and steal the Empire State Building and steal Optimus Prime. So, yeah, this thing is gigantic. It's, you know, like how they map out how big Star Wars ships are?
Yeah.
Like, based on that, it's kind of the size of a Star Destroyer. Like, why couldn't they just make that into a battleship and just fly? You know, you could take
literally
over.
Literally destroy the city. Make it your own.
Yeah, they just kind of prefer to build things underground.
I like how the Constructicons, as they're working, and banging up on the ceiling of their base and bringing the Empire State Building down, all they're doing is just complaining about the work while at the same time talking about who is the best at their job. It's classic New York Union. It's classic New York Union. My dad was a union guy. It's complaining about the job while also being the best at your job.
So, yeah, the Constructicons are working in the new Decepticon headquarters, and they... I mean, there's no other way to describe it. They reach out and steal the Empire State Building. It goes completely down in its foundation, and...
What has Gru done now?
Yeah, it does like a Despicable Me
right.
type of yes. plot. Yeah.
Girls, I'm stealing the moon.
Yeah. At first, I thought it was really ridiculous, but there's a little cool angle to it later in the episode, which I don't think they spent enough time on. It took me like the second time watching it when they're kind of panning over what's going on in the base that it's actually really cool. But we go to the Ark. And the Autobots are watching the news of
Megatron's work.
Oh, yeah. Optimus, of course, jumps to the conclusion.
The right conclusion.
Yes. And they all take off to New York. almost leave Spike behind.
Yes.
And then suddenly they're in the water. Like, did you go around?
Well, right.
Everything?
Where is the Ark even supposed to be situated? Is it? I always feel like it was in the southwest.
Okay.
I thought it was in the northwest.
It's in the west.
In the Marvel comics, it's in Oregon. Because,
yes.
Because the volcano is supposed to be based on Mount St. Helens. So they kind of establish that more. In the show, so far, they don't really say. They kind of get into the desert fairly quickly. So I guess thinking southwest, it's you're not wrong. I just kind of always think, but either way, they're somewhere in the out west, whether it's southwest or Oregon, like in the comics. But
right.
I don't know why they're skiing up the East River.
The Autobots are amazing because, you know, for some reason they can't fly like their Decepticon, you know, brothers. But
only when they need to.
Skis. They have skis.
And somehow they can move with them.
Yeah. This is not the first time we've seen them with skis.
But my theory as to how they got here, they were on another mission.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I don't think these guys... Did we see these guys leave the Ark?
We did not see these guys leave the Ark.
Oh, so this is the guys skiing in question are Mirage, Wheeljack, and Sideswipe.
You know, like the super fast cars in the Jeep.
Yeah.
Right.
The ones that wouldn't be robots in disguise.
Yeah. I didn't even pick up on the fact that these are not any of the people that left.
Yeah, because that was Ironhide, Blue Streak, Bumblebee, Ratchet.
For some reason, Trailbreaker.
Yeah.
Oh, then they drive in. Then they just drive in the next scene.
Yep. Yeah, then maybe this is like an Untold Tales of the Transformers. And then, oh yeah, and then they're joined by Hound and Sunstreaker.
Yeah, they just catch up out of nowhere.
And meanwhile, Optimus tells everyone to meet in Central Park, the rendezvous in Central Park, which is
you just drive right into Central Park.
Yeah. Just rolling over picnics and people doing yoga classes.
Well,
and
listen, this is the New York of the 1980s.
Well, now, very true.
I know you guys have been to New York, right? You kids have been to New York, I believe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Yes. So the New York of the 1980s, I don't know if your parents have told you this, was a much different New York. It was way more dangerous. Mm-hmm. You couldn't go to Central Park without getting mugged. And there's even a joke about it later. It's there's some really good classic 1980s New York references in this episode.
Mm-hmm. So then we get to this shot that I was talking about where it's just panning through the base. But if I'm stopping right here, kids, you see that's the top of the Empire State Building. Huh? So and what it looks like is that so the Decepticons pulled it down and there's actually sort of it's embedded in their base. And they're building on top of it. The Constructicons are already kind of forming this Cybertronian architecture over the Empire State Building. It's like they don't. That's a really cool idea.
But then they got to push it back up.
And they do.
I know.
Like, but it's not that all of that is not super clear until I watch it again. And they show this shot twice, and it's a really nice looking shot. But they don't really linger on it too much. But no, I think that's a really cool idea. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you see by the end that they're doing it to all of the buildings.
Yeah.
New Cybertron.
And then mm-hmm. Laserbeak tries to talk.
Oh yeah.
What's that, boy? What'd you say?
So the Autobots get to Central Park, and Rumble and Frenzy just immediately pull up on them and start blasting away, and Frenzy gets a Rumbler. Rumble and Frenzy start rumbling, which
wait, what
makes Ironhide do the most pathetic fall? He just falls sideways and goes.
I'm gonna pass out.
Yeah,
I'm gonna pass out. Gone.
Yeah, and it just goes to the transition. It's like, oh man, you can. He's tougher than that.
He's Ironhide.
Yeah.
Do you think that the idea of them stealing Prime seems out of? Like, it doesn't make sense in the story to me. It just seems like they had to get Prime out of commission or something, but or they're just working towards the payoff at the end, maybe. They're just working towards the payoff at the end.
Yeah, as the Autobots and Decepticons are fighting in Central Park, Hook kind of knocks a hole in the ground and Optimus falls right through and does his... He doesn't do that weird yell in Enter the Nightbird, where it's obviously someone else's voice, where he goes like, whoa, whoa. But yeah, Optimus falls into their base, lands in Long Haul.
Perfectly.
Megatron has this kind of little toy rocket looking thing.
Looks like an Expo marker.
Yes, like a dry erase marker. Like, and paralyzes him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He just puts him into paralysis. Then he doesn't kill him or anything. He just puts him in paralysis.
This is payback for the Vertigo Ray.
Yeah. Clearly, this is just Megatron being very vindictive and being very petty, because he could have killed him easily, but he doesn't. He gives the order to raise up the Empire State Building back into its original position as new Cybertron. So what we're seeing here, what I was getting at before, it's the Empire State Building coded in Cybertronian architecture.
Kind of small to be new Cybertron.
Well, they're spreading. They're building out. And yeah, then it goes to Commercial One, where Longhaul is just kind of driving Optimus around to what outcome we don't know yet.
It's a good one, though.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have new Cybertron, which was previously New York, which was previously New Amsterdam. So really, I mean, we really are just continuing along with the new naming tradition, like the They Might Be Giants sang about.
That's right. In Megatron's master plan, he tried to rename the city Megatronia 1.
Yes.
Which doesn't have quite the ring to New Cybertron. I think it's a little cleaner. And plus,
yeah,
he's setting up that he's going to have to make a Megatronia 2, Megatronia 3.
Because that was his like world takeover plan. This is just his New York takeover plan.
Yeah, he was going to start small and build out. But now, yeah, he's starting with New York.
But New Cybertron would mean that he would also have to at least try to take over more parts of the world, because Cybertron is a planet, and that he's just taking over New York and calling it Cybertron.
I do like New how Cybertron. He specifies multiple times in this episode. It's like, first New York, then the rest of North America.
Yes. Like, Why not the United States.
Yeah. Right.
We also have
Canada too.
Yeah.
We've been to South America and Africa before.
That's true.
Europe and Asia are just okay.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else says, one of the Autobots says earlier, like, it's the biggest city in North America.
Mm-hmm. Is it though?
Yeah,
I don't know. It's the biggest city in North America. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Mexico City would be too, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we come back and the Autobots are suddenly on the Brooklyn Bridge. What were they doing in Brooklyn?
No, they need to get some sleep.
Yeah. Well, no sleep. Well, that's what I was thinking. Like, maybe I didn't look up what hip hop albums came out in 1985. Like, maybe they were kind of stopping over in Brooklyn and picking up some albums.
I don't know. Brooklyn in 1985 also was not the Brooklyn of today.
Right.
It was also a scary place.
So they get off the Brooklyn Bridge. Is there an off-ramp? I don't think there is where they were going.
That's part of the new infrastructure in New Cybertron.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we get back to Megatron and the Constructicons with the Paralyzed Prime. And a really smooth animation from... who is that?
Hook.
That's Hook.
Pause it, and he looks like he's breakdancing.
Yeah. Again, good job with the fluidity of the animation. He pulls out a lightsaber.
Beam saber.
Or Gundam beam saber.
Bean saber.
and almost more effectively, the violence is done off camera. Like, it just shows him holding his saber, and then it cuts away. The next shot, he's dumping out Optimus as just a pile of parts.
Oh, no.
I know. It's kind of horrifying. And Megatron picks up his head, and he's still alive.
Connects a circuit to something.
Yeah. And I think this is the first time, I don't think we've seen this before, where Optimus sort of has this kind of Aquaman looking thing.
Yes.
Where he sends out... where he can communicate with the rest of his body.
I knew he had three parts, but geez.
Decapitated Optimus Prime is giving me Marvel comic vibes.
Yes. Yeah, we've read the first maybe 30 issues of the Marvel comics. And yeah, like most of the first year of the comic, Optimus is just a head.
Right.
When Shockwave shows up, kills everybody. And
same with Megatron animated.
Yeah. Transformers animated. Yeah, Megatron was a disembodied head for a while. Optimus will get put back together thanks to his kind of weird Iron Giant powers, and he already uses it where he orders his arms to grab Megatron and trips him.
Should have flipped him off. That would have sent more of a message.
Where is he getting the what do you call it? Leverage? Where's the leverage coming from? It's just two floating arms.
Yeah, it establishes that Prime has this kind of limb.
Telepathic control.
Mm-hmm. And now we go to Spike in the East River, which, again, I'm guessing in 1985 New York, not the cleanest. So this was his idea. This was his idea when he's like, everybody, take a right on the Brooklyn Bridge.
On Bumblebee's shoulders.
Yeah, he's on Bumblebee's shoulders.
Like a boss.
Just in his full clothing. Just like didn't even strip down to keep his clothes dry. Just going right in his Dickies work shirt or whatever he has on.
How can he deal with wet feet?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he has accessorized before. He has had scuba gear, Spike. But in this case, he's staying in standard Spike outfit. And this Autobot crew, Mirage, Hound, Bumblebee, who else is with them? Sunstreaker, I think. They're going through the sewers of New York.
Sewers of New York in the 1980s means one thing.
Yep. The myth of alligators.
Who says it's a myth?
Well, yeah, clearly. Because
it could be robot alligators down there. We don't know.
It could be robot alligators, and it is. It is like a robo-reptile.
Alligatorcon.
Alligatorcon. Yeah.
Which they refer back to.
Do they call it an alligatorcon in the show?
Yes.
They do.
Because they, like Transformers Ultimates, it's sort of like the red line, but cartoony. And they made an alligatorcon.
So they did make a toy of this.
Yeah, non-transforming, but someone, like a third party one, they used a mold that they had for a like Skull Crusher from the Rebirth season 4 headmaster.
Okay.
They use that same mold for that.
Yeah.
Which works really well.
So we should explain what we're looking at. This is the Alligatorcon.
We should explain what we're looking at. We have no idea.
Well, yeah, it is a robot alligator in very obvious Optimus Prime colors, which I think is very cool. When I was watching this, I did not remember that this was showing up.
Oh, by the way, they're all clueless.
I know. He even has his chest windshield. He has his exhaust pipes. And they're like, Prime signal's coming from behind us. But all I see is this Optimus Prime colored alligator coming toward us.
Oh, look, there's an Autobot symbol on his body.
There is. Yeah, even that. Yeah. But I think that's kind of a cool design. It kind of what makes this episode fun.
Yeah, I think I really liked that design. I'm like, oh, that's a cool idea. And then he just rips his wall off of a train.
Yeah, there's an abandoned subway train, which they lure
the New York in the 1980s.
Oh, yeah, maybe this is like a a perfectly operating New York subway train. Well, it's not covered in graffiti or anything. I don't know. But they send it on its way, and is it Hound who's like, we're taking this to Madison Avenue and
Lexington.
Yeah, yeah.
But he says it so many streets.
Yeah, but he ends it, and the river.
Just like goes into the river. Ah!
Yeah, it's like they should have had another shot where they sent it away and he's like, I think that was Optimus. And then we go back to New Cybertron. They're already expanding. And another really nice paintings here where they're kind of building up around. You see like regular human New York buildings kind of getting disassembled, and you have the new structures.
You know, New York, can we think of Ed Koch might be the mayor at this point, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
But like, you know, being mayor of New York City is equivalent to, you know, being president or leader of a small country, right? It's a huge political position.
Thank
because
you,
of the number of people that you are governing.
Yes.
But you would think at some point while any of this was happening that Ed Koch would have called in the National Guard or something. But there's no sight of anyone trying to stop this except for the 5 to 8 Autobots that are in New York City right now.
Mm-hmm. They're not allowed to. Megatron took it over.
Well, in Megatron's master plan, though, when they took over Central City, the military, they had a squadron of military jets fly in and attack them. So
yeah, but that was human labor.
Oh, that's true. They already enslaved the city. Okay. Well, maybe Mayor Koch or whoever was mayor back then, maybe he was kind of like, hold up, we're getting some free construction out of this. We'll see where this goes.
No, this is the true American spirit.
I mean, you know, this is Wall Street era. This is
New City. Trump. There's probably a Trump Tower that's got it's all done up with the Cybertron stuff. Also, you have to keep in mind, this is This is just 1 year following when there was a giant ghost invasion in New York City. So, they didn't do anything about it either. So,
I did not want any of this. This is the worst trade deal in the history of trade deals.
New Cybertron, it's not as big as Trump Tower. Skywarp just puts a car in Mixmaster and steel girders.
I love that. I laughed out loud when I watched it because I was thinking, like, is this one of his powers that he can just take a vehicle and he's a concrete mixer. Just jams that car in there and it turns into girders.
We get a Starscream who's not really featured much in this episode.
Or even objecting.
Yeah. He's actually like admiring the work. You know, where he's looking out on the city with his hands on his hips. Like, this is starting to feel like home. Yeah, he's not trying to take over the job for once. So we go back to Prime's head and the Autobots find it. Ratchet turns him on. And
can you see me?
Yeah, and then Optimus does his power again and sends his legs flying toward him.
Yes, they just fly right through that opening.
Yeah.
Why didn't he do that before?
Yeah.
Just kick Megatron in the face.
Mm-hmm. and so now they put it together that alligator con was probably made out of Optimus Prime parts. So they bring him down into the sewer and his legs are just standing there.
And they wrestle that alligator.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, Optimus calls him and the alligator, you know, comes through the hole. And yeah, they just kind of jump him and tear him apart.
Hey, my body.
I know.
That's parts forming.
Yeah.
There are too many extra parts from the original figure.
That's true. Yeah, because in the rubble, you see his head and then you see his
fake windshield.
What would have been the windshield chest. Yeah. Again, my problem is like robot ethics, you know, like was this thing just not alive enough? It didn't have a spark. Like it doesn't quite. We've seen a lot of robots in this season that don't quite count as living robots. And the living robots don't seem to care about them. They're willing to just destroy them or tearing up. They're not.
Right. They're abominations to them.
So Optimus gets put together, except his right arm. But now he has renewed confidence so much that he kind of hugs Mirage
in a weird half hug.
What else can he do? Hug with his legs?
Yeah, just jumps on him. Now, where is Optimus Prime's right arm? It is atop of the spire of
the Empire State Building, the newly designed Empire State Building.
New Cybertron.
Which looks hilarious.
I know. Yeah, it's just this arm.
Gun tower.
And I love how they treat it like this is the ultimate weapon, where even like the Autobots are scared to kind of go up and get it for a while.
Let's get it.
They shouldn't be scared, though.
Yeah, it's just this arm with a, you know, I mean, his gun is cool, but like they've never really kind of made it out to be this like unstoppable weapon.
No. My favorite thing about that gun on top of that Empire State Building, though, is the way that Soundwave controls it. All he does is press a red button over and over again.
I know.
There's no movement. There's no like trackball or anything bang. Like that. It's just a red button.
Yep. And he's all too happy. He's just button mashing. He's
missile
like,
control, but missile command. Is it missile command or missile control?
Missile command.
Missile command, but way simpler.
Yeah. Yeah, he's playing it like how my dad would play me in the Street Fighter in the arcade. Like, I would practice all my moves, and he's like, I don't know what I'm doing. And he would just waste me. Like, Dad, you're not playing right.
Honestly, I button mash too.
I mean,
except I do beat my friend with Hadouken.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it works. But Soundwave seems very gleeful just to keep fire, 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 fire. And it's too much for the Autobots to stand. You know, Ratchet, his mouth is aghast in horror, and they just run away into commercial two.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And even more ridiculous is when Blue Streak and Hound take off, and they just fall right into a hole. Yeah, but underneath of it is, well, We don't know who it is. At first it's Rumble, and then it turns into Frenzy, but he's driving this the subway. He's
driving with this, the subway.
With this like frozen grin on his face when it's coming toward him. They start firing. It's so weird. And then it explodes with a really nice explosion effect. Frenzy goes flying. And then another weird thing is Bumblebee and the others start being chased by robo-taxis.
Battle taxis.
Another
icon of 1980s New York. The yellow cab. I pictured Douglas Booth sitting down with the staff and being like, what are we going to put in this? Well, it's New York. Well, we got to put Empire State Building. Check. Sewer alligators. Check. Battle taxis. Yes, yes, taxis. Absolutely. Check.
What about pizza? No, 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 no.
They saved the pizza for the turtles.
These battle taxis are pretty cool. These were built by the Constructicons, I think they say.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, who else?
Right. So they're basically just cabs with lasers on top of them. It would have been cool if they maybe transformed into like drones, but then the Autobots, they just jump over them.
Yes. It's a great leap.
Yeah. And then
Those shocks for something.
Right. But then Optimus builds up the confidence after seeing them, and then he transforms and to give Acom Studio credit, I love when he transforms and they keep the detail of his arm missing. So there's actually piece missing.
I was toy just going to say that. It's the most accurate thing in the whole episode for animation.
I'm looking at a freeze frame and yeah, it looks like someone had a toy on their desk because you even see the little square on top where his head flips around.
Yeah.
Right, yes.
I don't think they usually draw that in the cartoon.
No.
For my note for that, I just put down an eBay listing. Incomplete. G1 Optimus Prime.
Yeah. Optimus transforms, and then he just starts wrecking everybody. He runs into all the taxis. He runs in. The Constructicons kind of have like these kind of side turrets built in.
Yeah. Little towers of blasting at him from. He just drives right through everybody. Then we get back to the arm. The arm's trouble again.
Yes.
What are we going to do about that arm?
We are going to climb, Batman style. Ironhide has a grappling hook arm, which I'm not sure we've seen before. And he launches it to the top of the tower, and Optimus, Ironhide, and Ratchet go scaling up new Cybertron. Oh, yeah. Well, first, Megatron sends Starscream, Skywarp, and Thundercracker after him, and I'm not sure what happens. Like, they fire at him, and then they just kind of fly through the building?
They won't miss. They miss.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Huh? I don't understand. When I watched this before, I was confused as to why they just fly right through the building.
Yeah.
Like, you cowards! Start attacking! No!
But what's even weirder...
Say uncle.
Is, yeah, Sideswipe. Okay, now...
The uncle ordeal.
The last episode, we had Zach Krusey on. And we had a little debate, because he didn't know, he's like, okay, can Autobots fly or not? And the best answer I could give him was, they don't unless they need to. Early on in the series, they did fly here and there, but then they kind of stopped. But in this case, it looks like Sideswipe just jumps up on Starscream.
Sideswipe is kind of known for doing that. Sideswipe and Sunstreaker, since their character bios were mixed up. And I'm not sure which one had the flying gimmick originally, but I don't know.
Oh, it's like written into their character profile?
I think, maybe.
Oh, okay. I didn't
know that. Is that, I did not know that. And that's interesting because I feel like there was in the IDW comics, there was a whole storyline of one of those vehicles being like a traitor, like, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Traitor to the Decepticons. And I wonder if it was the one that could fly.
Oh.
It would make so much sense if that was like the reason they picked them is because they're like, oh, well, he could fly. You know why he can fly? Because he used to be in allegiance with the Decepticons.
Yeah, but then after he takes care of Starscream, he's literally flying like Superman. Like there's a shot where he's got the fist at the camera.
Talking about uncles.
Yeah, I didn't know Decepticons.
Say uncle.
Yeah.
Uncle.
So, okay, we'll assume that he can actually fly. So now that they took care of the Seekers, now Megatron orders the construction of Devastator.
Construction of Devastator.
Yeah, which Wheeljack is shook. There's that shot where the...
Oh,
he's rounding the corner of a building and he just was like... And then it goes back to him. It's just a static shot of a close-up on his head just looking up in terror.
Might I also mention the changing visor and eyes of Devastator?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I...
Yes.
Personally, I like the visor better, but they just change too many times.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Especially when he's holding Prime up to his face and talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
That's when he takes his glasses off.
Yeah.
Listen.
Maybe he's nearsighted. Like, who am I holding? Oh, Optimus.
Yeah, that's why he put him on after he transformed.
Mm-hmm. So that's going on. He starts scaling the building like some sort of thing that will be referenced later. But in the meantime, Spike and Bumblebee just wander into Megatron's lair. And Spike calls him a Megaklutz, which Megatron is greatly offended by. And then they start running away from him like a Scooby-Doo cartoon.
Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah, and which causes Megatron to take out the control of Optimus's arm. Which is, that's, you know, boy.
He's got some button smashing to do now.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole thing is like, really? That's how we're gonna do that?
He was mad.
Yeah, I guess. And then Devastator holds Optimus and just swats. He just picks him up and hits Ratchet and Ironhide with Optimus's body.
And then this is where we finally get some maybe military interaction, but it's helicopters.
Okay. When this happens, I like, where do these helicopters come from? Are they just kind of like on a helipad on top of a skyscraper that Wheeljack can just kind of hack into?
Everyone evacuated. No one will miss this.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah, because he has a remote control thing
that he's controlling them with.
And he's really bummed out when they get kind of swatted away. Like, even Hound just kind of pats his shoulder like, oh, it's okay, buddy.
It's okay, buddy.
He maybe saw King Kong, too.
Yes. Yeah, so Wheeljack's like, this reminds me of a movie I seen. Now, maybe the movie he was watching was not the original 1933 King Kong, because that has biplanes. But in the King Kong 76, they did have... helicopters. King Kong was taken down by two helicopters. He was on top of the World Trade Center, because that was newly
in
completed.
76, right?
Yep, that was newly completed, so they moved it to these new impressive buildings. And instead of planes,
wow.
he was taken down by helicopters.
Making everything bigger, why don't they?
Yeah. It's not a great movie. It has its moments, but it's weird.
It has a spider pit, though.
Right? Oh, no.
Ah.
In the King Kong, in King Kong 76, the only other big animal is he fights this kind of snake looking thing. There's no T-Rex fight or anything. And if I remember correctly, yeah, it's just a big snake that kind of wraps around him and then he just kind of tears it open like a sausage.
Speaking of bratwurst.
So, the next thing that happens that I really love is when Ratchet and Ironhide, after getting up, after being knocked down,
mm-hmm.
realize that Megatron is above them.
Yes!
And they shoot...
and shit.
They shoot the ceiling out, which is the floor under Megatron and Soundwave, and they fall through it, and then they don't just fall to the ground right in front of them. They continue to fall through the building.
I know, just imagine like every floor.
Yes.
Oh.
It cracks me up. And then they shake hands like they're like it's like the greatest thing ever. It's like,
yeah.
You know, they're like, good job, buddy.
I've always wanted to try this, and it finally worked. So Optimus regains control of his arm, and he what does he say? Like,
it's not just an arm. He's like, luckily at the end of the arm is a hand holding a gun. Down goes Devastator.
Down he goes all the way. And I like how he very slowly falls past Ratchet, who, oh yeah, wait, Ratchet is holding Ironhide, who catches Optimus.
I put Van Letter.
Yeah, they're all holding onto each other while we see Devastator fall to the ground, Kong style.
Would he have reached his terminal velocity?
Good question.
But a Devastator falling from the Empire State Building would kill someone. How high is the
Empire State Building? He probably would not have reached terminal velocity.
No,
but it would have killed someone though.
Yeah, more than a quarter.
A lot of people. Although I didn't see one human in New York this entire time.
You know, that is true.
It evacuated.
They all fled.
Yeah, there is not a single human character. Maybe the only human was in the car that got turned into steel girders.
That's why the steel girders were red along. That's why they were fully red instead of just the chassis.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Oh, the outside.
So then their plan is foiled and the Constructicons fly off first and Megatron follows their lead. And then Optimus has his arm back, which kind of squeaks. Needs some WD-40 on that. And he says, like, everything is just the way it was, including New York. But they don't show what happens to the Empire State Building. Like, we see the Chrysler Building, or what seems to be the Chrysler Building in the background. But did they tear all that stuff apart? Did they leave it? They don't show it. They just drive off, and Bumblebee drives at the camera with his I Love New York bumper sticker.
Nice.
Good luck, humans.
Yeah.
See you later.
Yeah. Like they drive off and then the shot just kind of keeps going. And then you start seeing like humans kind of like crawling out from the doorways or like through the manhole covers. Like,
are they gone yet?
Yeah, they're gone. Are they gone?
So we couldn't evacuate. So we went into the Decepticon bunkers.
Yeah. What do we do with this giant metal city now?
Hey guys, check out this alligator head I found.
Yeah.
Honestly, I would. Could you taxidermy a metal head?
No.
I'd still stuff it.
So what do you think? Did they just kind of keep everything? The Autobots have not really rebuilt stuff that gets wrecked in their battles, as we've seen.
They're just like, okay, bye. Oh, no, the superheroes don't either.
Right.
Maybe there's That's some, what I mean, in Marvel Comics, there was always that idea of damage control, right?
Yes.
The people that come in, the company that comes in after the destruction to clean up and everything. There's some Transformers version of damage patrol in this universe, I'm sure.
But there we go. That is the end of City of Steel. So, Mario, as our guest, we usually rate the episodes 1 through 10. And we'll let you go first. And
I am going to give City of Steel a 6 out of 10, and most of that is just for the wackiness of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And the New York, all the New York love that they tried to jam into this episode with the alligator and the taxis and the King Kong and all of that.
I will go 7.5. I love seeing the alligator and the taxi bots and the King Kong homage and... Yeah, there's a lot to enjoy, and not just fun to watch, but also just a lot of odd things happening.
I would most likely give it a 7.
Okay.
It would have been like a 5 or a 6, if not for like the different animation style.
It's funny, when we were talking with Zach about the Steve Ditko drawn Transformers coloring books, it's kind of reminds me of this, like the very clean shapes, very kind of open looking character designs. Yeah. Which it's kind of cool. Cause like a lot of times you're used to seeing Transformers like very, very super detailed. Like the IDW stuff. Like I don't know how these guys draw.
Oh, me neither. Right.
Robot after robot after robot. Like I God bless them. I could never do that. Especially if you're drawing semi-monthly. But sometimes I appreciate when they're not as weird, like kind of the UK stuff where they almost just have like human faces, That kind of creeps me out. But
yeah,
but
yeah,
this is
teeth.
Yeah.
Teeth, faces,
mm-hmm.
skin.
But this style I find endearing. It may not be my favorite, but I like seeing them a little cleaner like that. Elsa, what do you think?
I say 6.5.
Okay.
I liked it. It just was a little confusing and it didn't really speak to me. It was okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Mario, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So, do you have anything to plug or anything, you know, to recommend to read or watch or listen to?
No, not at all. I'm not plugging anything or recommending anything. Just read some Transformers, watch some Transformers. As long as it's not Beast Wars, we're fine.
Okay, I was going to say if you had anything to unplug, but that's too far.
I want
to
unplug the Beast Wars. This is a contention with me and your father, kids.
Yeah, I was going to start this episode by saying, so we're watching Transmutate, episode 36 of Beast Wars. But, you know, I was trying to be nice, trying to be polite, and then, you know, we're finishing this episode, and you just, you know.
Watch Transformers, not Beast Wars.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at my Kingdom Megatron right now, and it's beautiful. I got Waspinator right there.
That's
I mean, what's this Beast Wars movie going to be like, Mike?
He's not supposed to say.
Yeah, we'll talk later. Okay, everybody. Okay. Well, thank you for joining us.
This is not for the public.
Yeah, we'll see you next week on One More Prime. Bye.
Bye, everyone.